The balance sheet closes at midnight. Inside the building, no one is sleeping. Phones vibrate, printers hum. A few floors up, numbers are being moved fast, then moved back just as fast. Tens of billions in debt slide off the page. For a moment, the firm looks safer, leaner, stable. Outside, the market only sees the snapshot. These are not long-term fixes. They are overnight deals, borrowed cash, promises that last days. But when the quarter ends, those promises vanish from the report. Leverage drops. Risk looks contained. Confidence holds just long enough. Inside the bank, people know the truth. The debt never leaves. It waits in the next window, the next reversal, the next scramble. This maneuver has a name, Repo 105. It buys time, it buys silence, it buys the illusion of control. And when the illusion breaks, it does not crack slowly. It collapses all at once, taking the firm, the market, and millions of ordinary lives with it. Chapter 1. The quarter close illusion. The week before the quarter closes is never quiet at Lehman Brothers. September is worse. By early 2008, the hallways carry a constant tension, not panic yet, something tighter, like a held breath that will not release. On the trading floors, screens glow long after sunset. Risk reports update by the minute. Liquidity desks track every dollar coming in and going out. Phones ring with the same questions from the same counterparties. How leveraged are you? How exposed? How long can you last if markets freeze again tomorrow? The firm answers with numbers. Those numbers matter, not just internally. They are fed into models across the street. Credit desks at other banks watch them. Rating agencies watch them. Investors watch them. Regulators glance at them. Everyone is looking for signs of weakness. Everyone knows that perception moves faster than reality. Inside the building, executives feel the pressure from both sides. The market is closing in. The firm's balance sheet is bloated. Debt sits heavy. Leverage is high. Confidence is thinning. At quarter end, there's only one thing that counts: the snapshot. A balance sheet is not a movie. It is a still image. It captures one moment, midnight on the last day of the reporting period. That moment defines how safe the firm looks to the outside world. Lehman's leadership understands this clearly. They have lived through past crises. They know how quickly sentiment can turn. They also know that if the numbers cross certain lines, the market reaction will not be gradual. It will be immediate. So the focus narrows, not on long-term fixes, not on reducing actual risk, on getting through the date. In conference rooms and private offices, discussions circle the same problem: how to make the balance sheet look smaller without selling assets into a falling market. How to show lower leverage without changing the underlying exposure. How to survive the optics long enough to buy time. The answer is already in use. Short-term repurchase agreements have been part of Wall Street for decades. They are supposed to be simple. One party sells securities and agrees to buy them back shortly after, usually overnight. In practice, they function like secured loans. Cash comes in, securities go out, then the trade reverses. But at Lehman, a variation is being used with a specific purpose. These transactions are timed, carefully. They cluster around reporting dates. They clear just before the books close. They reverse immediately after. Internally, they have a name, Repo 105. The name itself is technical, almost boring, but its effect is not. By structuring these deals in a certain way, the firm temporarily removes large amounts of debt from its balance sheet, tens of billions, sometimes more. For a few days, the liabilities are gone. The leverage ratio improves. The firm looks safer than it was the day before. The transactions are short. Everyone involved knows this. The cash must be returned. The securities must come back. The debt will reappear as soon as the quarter ends. But the snapshot does not care about tomorrow. On the days leading up to the close, activity spikes. Assets move out. Cash flows in. Liabilities slide off the page. Internal reports begin to look cleaner. Emails move between departments. Timing is critical. The deals must settle before the cutoff. Accounting entries must be precise. There is no room for delays. Risk managers see the changes. Some question them. Others note the timing. The effect is obvious to anyone paying attention. But the direction from the top is clear. The firm needs relief. The market needs reassurance. This is not the moment for internal debate. As one executive later describes it, the goal is to manage the balance sheet, not over months, over days. By the final evening, the numbers are where they need to be. leverage is lower, the firm appears less strained. Reports prepared for investors and counterparties reflect a moment of calm. Outside the building, no one sees the machinery behind the image. Analysts receive the filings. They compare them to last quarter. Some raise eyebrows, others take comfort. The firm does not look great, but it does not look doomed. For now, confidence holds. Inside, the relief is temporary. Everyone knows it. The debt has not been eliminated. It has been parked, waiting to return. As soon as the quarter turns, the trades unwind. Cash goes back out. Securities return. Liabilities reappear. The balance sheet swells again. This is not a secret within the firm. It is understood as part of the process. A way to manage appearances during a crisis. The question is how far that understanding extends. Some see the maneuver as aggressive but permissible. Accounting flexibility pushed to its edge in extraordinary times. Others see something darker. A deliberate effort to present a picture that does not reflect reality, knowing that markets depend on those numbers to assess risk. What matters in this moment is not the conclusion. It is the environment. Lehman is fighting for survival. Liquidity is thinning. Trust is eroding. Every day brings new rumors. Every headline carries weight. The firm believes it can ride out the storm if it can hold on just a little longer. If markets stabilize, if confidence returns, if funding lines remain open, Repo 105 becomes part of that strategy. Not a fix, a bridge. But bridges are only useful if there is solid ground on the other side. As the quarter closes, executives review the final figures. They meet targets. They avoid triggering immediate alarms. The snapshot holds. For a brief moment, the illusion works. Yet outside forces are already shifting. Counterparties are looking beyond the filings. They are watching daily liquidity. They are listening to whispers. They are asking harder questions. The balance sheet looks cleaner. The market feels anything but calm. Inside Lehman Brothers, the clock does not reset with the new quarter. It speeds up. The same debt that disappeared is back. The same pressure returns. Only now, the room for maneuver is smaller. The firm has bought time. What it has not bought is trust. As the days tick forward, the gap between appearance and reality grows harder to manage. And the question that lingers, unspoken but heavy, is simple. How long can a firm survive on numbers that only hold for a moment? Chapter 2, Inside Repo 105. The trades look ordinary at first glance. Securities move, cash moves, paperwork follows. In another market, on another day, no one would pause over them. What makes Repo 105 different is not the motion. It is the treatment. In standard repurchase agreements, the transaction is recorded as a loan. The firm receives cash. The securities remain on the balance sheet. The obligation stays visible. Leverage does not change. That is not what happens here. In Repo 105, the securities transferred are valued at 105% of the cash received. That extra 5% is not a margin detail. It is the hinge. The firm treats the transaction as a sale rather than a loan. Assets leave the balance sheet. Liabilities do too. For a short window, the debt is gone. This treatment is not permitted under United States accounting rules for routine repos. The substance of the deal is clear. Cash comes in, cash goes back out. The securities return. The economic reality is borrowing, but Lehman finds a workaround. The firm relies on a legal opinion issued under United Kingdom law. That opinion allows the transaction to be classified as a true sale if structured precisely. The trades are routed through a London affiliate. Documentation is aligned to meet the legal threshold. Once that opinion is in hand, the accounting follows. Inside the firm, the process is well understood by those who manage it. These trades are not random. They are scheduled. They are scaled. They appear in clusters near reporting dates and fade immediately afterward. The effect is measurable. Billions in liabilities vanish from the balance sheet just long enough to reduce reported leverage. Ratios improve. Pressure eases. Internally, some controls flag the activity. The timing is too neat, the reversals too consistent, but the trades are approved, they clear, they reverse. Risk management raises questions about reliance on short-term funding. The response is not denial. It is urgency. There is no time for restructuring the firm. There is only time to survive the quarter. Compliance is quiet. The transactions are documented. Legal opinions exist. The treatment has been used before. No rule is explicitly broken on paper. This is where the line blurs. The distinction between aggressive accounting and deception hinges on intent and disclosure. Lehman does not clearly disclose the temporary nature of the balance sheet reductions. Investors see the snapshot, they do not see the rewind. Internally, executives understand how the market reads those numbers. They know lower leverage signals stability. They know that counterparties rely on reported figures to make funding decisions. The trades are not designed to mislead a single analyst. They are designed to influence the system. As summer turns toward fall, the external environment worsens. The collapse of other institutions has shaken confidence across the market. Funding that once rolled automatically now requires daily reassurance. Counterparties shorten terms, haircuts rise, questions sharpen. Lehman responds by leaning harder on Repo 105. The volumes increase, the reliance deepens. At the midpoint of this strategy, something shifts. Despite cleaner balance sheets at quarter end, daily liquidity continues to deteriorate. Counterparties look past the filings, they examine cash flows, they see the strain, the firm's reported leverage improves. Its ability to fund itself does not. This is the reversal. The tool that was meant to buy time begins to expose weakness. The more the firm relies on short-term maneuvers, the more fragile it appears to those watching closely. Internally, the gap between accounting presentation and lived reality grows uncomfortable. Executives track both sets of numbers. One is public, one is operational. They do not align. Some argue the strategy is justified. Extraordinary markets demand extraordinary measures. Others worry the firm is crossing from flexibility into misrepresentation. The distinction matters less with each passing day. As liquidity tightens, the trades themselves become harder to execute. Counterparties demand more collateral. Some refuse to participate. The pool shrinks. The firm adapts by concentrating exposure, fewer partners, larger trades, higher stakes. This concentration increases risk. A failure in one channel could cascade quickly. There is no margin for error. By late summer, the timing becomes critical. Repo 105 depends on precise settlement dates. Any delay threatens the illusion. Any failure exposes the full balance sheet at the worst possible moment. The pressure is no longer abstract. It is operational. One missed trade could trigger a loss of confidence that no accounting treatment can contain. Internally, discussions turn darker. Liquidity scenarios shorten. Days replace weeks. Stress tests assume funding disappears overnight. The trades continue, but their effect diminishes. Markets are no longer fooled by quarterly optics. They want real answers, real capital, real stability. Repo 105 can hide debt on paper. It cannot create cash where none exists. As the firm approaches the edge, the strategy reveals its final weakness. It relies on trust. Trust that counterparties will continue to roll funding. Trust that markets will accept snapshots as reality. Trust that time can still be bought. That trust is eroding. When counterparties begin to step back, the firm feels it immediately. Funding gaps widen, emergency meetings multiply, the room grows quieter. The tool that once bought relief now amplifies danger. Each unwind brings back not just debt, but fear. Executives face a narrowing set of options. None involve balance sheet maneuvers alone. The problem is no longer presentation. It is survival. As Repo 105 loses effectiveness, the firm is forced to confront what it delayed. The debt never left. The risk never fell. Only the warning was postponed. The midpoint has passed. Time is no longer on Lehman's side. Chapter 3. After the numbers broke, the collapse does not arrive as a surprise inside the firm. It arrives as confirmation. By the time Lehman Brothers files for bankruptcy, the balance sheet illusion has already failed. The trades that once smoothed the edges can no longer be executed at scale. Counterparties have stepped back. Funding has dried up. Trust is gone. What remains is exposure. When the firm falls, the temporary nature of Repo 105 becomes impossible to ignore. The liabilities that vanished at quarter end are back in full view. There is no reporting window left to hide behind. The snapshot is no longer selective. It is continuous. In the immediate aftermath, attention turns to what went wrong. Investigators sift through documents, emails are reviewed, transaction logs are reconstructed. Patterns that were invisible to the market become clear on paper. An examiner is appointed to review the firm's failure. The findings are blunt. Repo 105 materially altered the firm's reported financial condition. tens of billions in liabilities were temporarily removed from the balance sheet near reporting dates. The transactions were reversed shortly after. This is not presented as speculation. It is documented. Timelines match, volumes align. The effect on leverage ratios is quantified. What remains unresolved is intent. The examiner does not conclude that executives committed a crime. The report distinguishes between what is proven and what is alleged. The use of Repo 105 is described as aggressive accounting. The lack of clear disclosure is criticized. The reliance on legal opinions to bypass domestic accounting standards is noted, but criminal intent is not established. This distinction matters. It defines the limits of accountability. Inside the firm, decisions were made under extreme pressure. Executives sought to stabilize perception in a collapsing market. They relied on legal structures that allowed temporary balance sheet relief. They did not invent the repo market. They exploited its flexibility. Whether that exploitation crossed an ethical line is debated. Whether it crossed a legal one is harder to prove. No senior executive is convicted in connection with Repo 105. No criminal court rules on the intent behind the transactions. The story ends not with punishment, but with ambiguity. For many outside the firm, that outcome feels incomplete. Investors lost billions, employees lost jobs, markets seized, pension funds suffered. The collapse rippled through the global financial system. Yet accountability stops at disclosure failures and regulatory critique. The episode exposes a deeper problem. Modern finance often operates at the edge of what rules explicitly forbid. When those rules lag behind innovation, behavior can remain technically permissible while still misleading. Repo 105 lives in that gap. It does not erase debt, it delays its visibility. It transforms a question of risk into a question of timing. In the aftermath of the collapse, regulators respond. Accounting standards tighten. Repo disclosures receive more scrutiny. Off-balance sheet treatment becomes harder to justify without clear economic separation. The industry absorbs the lesson, at least on paper. But the structure of incentives does not change easily. Firms are still judged on snapshots. Quarterly reports still dominate perception. Pressure to manage optics remains. What changes is language. New terms replace old ones. New structures perform similar functions with different documentation. The lesson is not that Repo 105 was unique. It is that it was visible. In the public narrative of the financial crisis, villains are often personalized. Faces are assigned. Stories demand culprits. Repo 105 resists that framing. It is not a person, it is a method. A method that reveals how fragile trust becomes when transparency depends on timing rather than truth. Inside Lehman Brothers, many believed they were buying time. That belief was not irrational. Markets do stabilize, crises do pass. Survival can hinge on days. What they misjudged was the cost of delay. By hiding leverage instead of reducing it, the firm postponed confrontation with reality. When reality arrived, it did so without warning and without mercy. The collapse does not just expose debt, it exposes a system that rewards appearance over substance. For regulators, Repo 105 becomes a case study. For academics, a cautionary example. For markets, a reminder that numbers without context can deceive. For ordinary people, it remains abstract, a technical maneuver buried in reports. Yet its consequences were anything but technical. Jobs vanished, savings shrank, confidence cracked. The debt never disappeared. It was always there. The warning signs were softened just long enough to delay action. In the end, Repo 105 does not explain the entire collapse. Lehman failed for many reasons: excessive leverage, concentrated risk, market panic, structural fragility. But Repo 105 explains something else. It explains how a firm can look stable while it is not, how compliance can coexist with misrepresentation, how legality can diverge from honesty. The final lesson is not about accounting, it is about trust. When trust is built on snapshots instead of substance, it cannot survive stress. When pressure rewards illusion, illusion becomes policy. And when the illusion breaks, it takes everything with it. The debt was never gone, only the warning was.